If you want to see more videos and interviews like this from influential people in tech, finance, and sports, subscribe to the channel and make sure you hit the bell to be alerted. And go a step further and join the YouTube and membership area for early releases of videos like this. I'm out of here. Ha! It's your boy Crypto Blood, and welcome to another Kicking It session. Today I've got a returning guest, Manny Alejandro out of NYC. Had a great time with him last time he was on, so I definitely want to get an update on just a variety of things. Blockchain, I mean, he's in NYC, so he's kind of at the epicenter of this whole pandemic thing, and I wanted to get his feedback on what's going on the ground level. Manny, what's going on, brother? Thanks for coming back on.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you. I appreciate it. Thank you. Absolutely. I mean, there's a good use case. There's a very successful trader. His name is Bill Ackman.
And, oh, yeah.
He's a billionaire, right?
I think I've heard of Bill Ackman.
Right? You know who he is, right?
Oh, yeah, I do. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So you know what happened over the last couple of months, right?
Yeah.
So he took a position that the market was going to go down, and he went on CNBC, and he vehemently, passionately expressed his feelings. Unfortunately, he didn't disclose his position, but that's a whole other issue. He backed up what he said on CNBC and said that he did disclose it. His investors knew, whatever. But nonetheless, he's so influential and he's so powerful.
The day he was
on CNBC, right? The day he was on CNBC, he roiled the markets. The markets went down. The next day, Crypto Blood, the next day, the New York Stock Exchange had the circuit breakers. Okay,
oh,
because it opened up down 7%.
Right.
That's how much fear grips
the world
and the market from one guy.
I have to say though, he did his due diligence. He was on top of this virus back
100%.
In January,
100%.
Right, and I watched that whole interview. I don't think he disclosed. You're right. He said he had. What did he say? He didn't disclose exactly. You're right though. But he was on top of his stuff, man. And I think
he knew it.
He
knew. He knows. He's a superstar trader. And, you know, he wouldn't be a billionaire if he wasn't. I mean, he's kind of like a Warren Buffett. He made his money from trading. He didn't make his money in another industry, a successful entrepreneur, and get into the market. I mean, he's traded up all that money, which is incredible. My point is, though, one individual roiled the U.S. push the U.S. market down in a very bearish way.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible if you think about what we're talking about with fear.
Yep.
If certain individuals, Trump, Fauci, Dr. Birx, Bill Ackman, people on CNBC, Mark Cuban, whomever, have Gary Vee, have a voice that people listen to, particularly now that people are home, people are bored, people are sick of watching the news, you know, whatever. So they're looking for different outlets. If you could communicate something to people, people are ready to listen and think of the impact that that has. So unfortunately, we're hearing different things, right? That causes more anxiety too, you know?
Yes, it does.
Do we not open New York by May 15th? Do we wait till the end of May? Well, what about Michigan? What about, you know, bird seed or fertilizer in Michigan? You know, there's these weird disparities between states. And then you got now the politicization of this where, okay, it's become political. These governors, they're Democrat and I'm a Republican. You won't let me do my business and open up my business. I mean, it's kind of silliness, right? Because at the end of the day.
That's what I don't like. That's exactly, Manny, what I am very upset with America in many, at least the America I see on online or whatnot. It's politicized, man. And I just don't. I hate that it's come to that point when this is a life and death situation, not a blue or red situation.
Absolutely. Look, we can always make money back, right? I mean, money is something that you have, you don't have, whatever. And you could always make it back, but you can't get back your life. You can't get back the lives of family members or loved ones that we lose. And life, and every life is precious. So every life lost is one too many lives lost, I say, okay? So we need to be practical. And at the end of the day, I don't think there's some deep state out there that's colluding amongst all the governors saying, let's shut everything down so people can't go to work. The states can't open and unemployment's going to go to 20%.
It doesn't make sense because the deep no one wins out of this.
Right.
The wealthier are losing money. The middle class are just done.
Right.
And the only ones that's getting by are the ones that were at the bottom anyway. So their lives didn't change.
It's like, you know, the term shooting yourself in the foot. I mean, you literally right now, the states are shooting themselves in both feet. They can't move. Why would they do that to like hurt themselves, the people in the states, purely to hurt the economy so Trump can't get reelected? I mean, that's just such a perverted, you know, idea and thought. Okay. I mean,
this is why I love you, Manny, because you're a Trump supporter like myself. But I've been critical of Trump in some facets in this whole situation. He's done some things great. He's done some things that could have been done better. I don't think any, and I saw you put up a tweet about Barack Obama getting on Trump. Like, no president would have been able to do any better, to be honest with you, in my opinion. I don't think any president would have been able to do any better, or if so, very marginally, not much. What are your thoughts about how the president is handling this pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, Obama's late to the game, right? So now he was reluctant to endorse Biden because he, let's be honest here, right? Like amongst Biden. Friends here. I don't know what his relationship is with Biden. He clearly didn't want to upset the real progressive liberal wing of the party when Bernie was winning those primaries. And there's still a lot of Bernie supporters. So he waited. And I think at this point, his impact, his input, endorsement of Biden is really irrelevant. Okay. And now he wants to start going after Trump about the response to Corona. This is a really complicated situation because it's not something that a president or head of state has encountered before. So there's reliance upon the medical profession.
Exactly.
This is
That's where the ball was dropped.
This is a health issue. Exactly. This is a health issue. Okay. So you have to defer to the experts. Now, let me explain something to you. When you look at models, when you look at the curve in terms of flattening the curve, right?
Mm-hmm.
You look at those models are only as good as the data that we have. Now, if that data is based upon what we're getting out of China, we know that data is wrong, number one. Number two, it's all projection. So I would rather us have over-projected. Let's think about it. When you do a model, your model could be right or your model could be wrong. If your model's right, great. If your model's wrong, okay. Is your model under or over? Meaning that, did we think less people would die from this, or did we think more people would be infected and die? Because we thought more people would be infected and unfortunately die from it, we took precautions, and maybe we were overly precautious, right? Maybe we went beyond where we should based upon the data we had.
Or Manny, maybe we being precautious actually flattened the curve, so we didn't hit the projection.
Exactly. And it's gonna take. It might take like 20 years to figure that out. You're absolutely right. That's a great assessment. Yeah. My point is that it's okay for the models to be wrong in your favor.
That's right.
We're all angry that these models are wrong. That, oh my God, we said 2 million people were going to die and 80,000 people died. Well, isn't that a good problem? I keep telling people when they say that. That's like a life insurance policy. Do you get upset when you're not using your life insurance policy? You have a life insurance policy that kicks in when you die and you pay a premium. You don't die. You keep paying a premium. Do you go, wow, I just wasted money for this life insurance. You're alive. That's a good problem to have. Yeah. That's the kind of problem you want to have. You want the models to be off in your favor. And like you said, maybe because of social distancing and the fact that we shut things down, we prevented the disease from spreading at the rate that it did. Look, stuff like this happens all the time in the world, right? If you look at the Ebola, you look at, you know, other viruses we've had, the flu, right? I mean, this stuff happens all the time. It just doesn't happen to the magnitude. I think the problem that we face as a society globally is the coronavirus could be anything. It just happens to be the coronavirus exposed our vulnerabilities.
Yes,
it What do I mean by that? We have vulnerabilities in our healthcare system. So New York City has a lot of people, close to 9 million people in New York. We didn't have enough hospital beds. We didn't have enough ventilators. Now, unfortunately, we had to go through this panic mode to come to that determination because of Corona. We could have done assessments. We could have hired McKinsey. We could have hired a big consulting firm to say, how many hospital beds do we have? How many hospital beds do we need? Let's say there was a bomb, God forbid, at Grand Central Station or Penn Station during the Knicks game. at 7 o'clock, and MSG is on top of Penn Station in New York. Mm-hmm. You'd have, unfortunately, tens of thousands of people that would be injured if there was a nuclear bomb or something crazy, God forbid. We would have the same issue. Not enough doctors, not enough hospital beds at that point in time. Vulnerability that was exposed in our healthcare system. We could not scale up quick enough. Okay, that's a problem. It's nothing to do with Corona. That has a problem to do with our healthcare system, which goes from the federal government to the state government to the local city governments. We need to take care of that in case something like this happens again. We need to make sure that we could scale up quickly, because unfortunately, this might not be the last pandemic.
Yeah, and it's definitely not going to be. But I want to talk about Cuomo. Didn't know much about him before this pandemic. And I have to admit, I actually like the guy, man. I think he's doing a great job for your state. I really do. Like, he's not rushing. He's not buckling under the pressure of political games and stuff.
Right.
What's your assessment of Cuomo? How do you think he's doing for the state? And kind of go from there.
I think in terms of what you just said, he's doing great, right? In terms of people didn't know much about him. In a way, he's coming across. He's very smooth. He's very well prepared. He's articulate. He has PowerPoints. McKinsey is hired by the state. He's doing great. I think the problem is, before Corona, he's not been an effective leader. So what I'm talking about, what hospitals, lack of preparedness, that was before Corona.
Yeah.
Okay. We're running a very bad budget deficit in this state and in New York City. Right. Very close to the edge. We got issues potentially with our pensions before Corona.
Yeah.
OK, so he's doing a good job in terms of now calling the shots and allocating the hospital resources, the medical resources, the ventilators, the masks, the protective equipment. But before that, where was he? He was banning plastic bags in the state of New York. I swear to God, you could not go to the grocery store and get a plastic bag. Okay, they're moving to ban like plastic straws. Okay, that's the kind of stuff Cuomo did. Okay, and New York City is one of the states. There's three states in this country that have the highest taxes and are losing people.
I bet you they're all
New York,
liberal.
New York, 100% right. New York, Illinois, and California. And people are going to Florida, Georgia, Carolina, Texas, okay, Tennessee. They're leaving in droves, and people. A ton of people left New York right now. New York City won't come back. So I think Cuomo's doing a good job in terms of managing the crisis. So, right. But I want to distinguish between crisis management, crisis management is his new job. His job as governor, he's been a failure. New York is in a lot of trouble financially. Our MTA, our Mass Transportation Authority system, is one of the worst in the world. We just realized that we had, you know, tens of thousands of homeless people in the city, maybe 75,000 homeless people, and most of them use the subways as a homeless shelter. Did we just realize that? If you've ever taken a subway, unfortunately, there's so many homeless people. And unfortunately, they sleep on the trains. And we didn't realize that the subways were a petri dish for Corona. I've been calling for the New York City subways to literally be shut down, not 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Shut down in February when this first came out.
I agree.
There was a study done by MIT along the subway lines that a lot of people who lived along the subway lines where the subway stations were had a higher incidence of infection of Corona. So what the MTA did was they said, oh, we're going to clean up the subways every 3 days and disinfect it. They had these like rags and people are like wiping the poles and the handrails. They're like spreading the Corona. What are they doing to disinfect it? I wanted a thing shut down like they show in China. Someone with a hazmat suit on and some gun and spray some disinfected UV light. They're doing that now. They started this past week in New York. They closed down the subways between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m. to do this. And they helped the homeless get to shelters and stuff and help deal with this problem. But we're 2 months too late. And it's tens of thousands of people that have died because of that. So I blame, and I'm saying blame, I blame the governor, Cuomo. And I blame the mayor de Blasio for being too late. This is a timing issue.
De Blasio, man, I don't like him.
Not many people do.
All right, that guy, man. Oh my God, he was just taking shots at Trump, being very political with things when he should be handling his city, which is the epicenter of this virus. I want to talk about why you think, and this is still. I'm still just mind blown at where we are in America with this virus, because Little old me with a YouTube channel and a camera on the internet knew about this virus in January of 2020. January 22nd is the first time I did a video, actually. Started tracking this. Why did we miss the boat, man? We saw all the evidence, as you stated. We saw the people in China with the hazmat suits on. They're doing a disinfection stream cloud down the streets. And they have the guns and they're doing all this stuff. Draconian measures. Expected from the CCP, but they like money more than their people. So if they shut their economy down, we should be taking note to this. What happened, Manny? What happened?
That's a great question. And I think the last time that I was on your show, we spoke about Corona, and it was more specific to affecting the supply chain, because we have a lot of our factories and manufacturing in China. So we were looking at it purely as an economic situation and not as a health crisis.
And I
think, you know, I'm calling the shots the way I'm a straight shooter. I think people know me, know that. I think we missed the boat. I think we're a little too late to this thing in terms of, again, preparation.
Yeah.
Because we need to scale up. It could be anything. We need to be prepared. I think particularly in New York, we've let our guard down. 9/11 was tragic. Okay. Really, we changed the way we live our lives, not only in New York, but not only throughout the United States, but throughout the world. I mean, think about, there was one shoe bomber right after 9/11. Remember that guy? He was a British guy, took off his shoes trying to blow a plane.
Yeah.
Changed the whole system. Now when you go through TSA,
you gotta take your shoes off.
And right? I mean, it's one guy changed it for everything, you know, for everyone.
That's how it goes,
and changed everything.
One person or a small group of people ruined it for everyone.
Exactly. And the point is, you know, I like boots. I don't want to take my boots off, but, you know, I go through TSA pre-check. You know, we all got to comply. And Fourth Amendment rights, you know, where are they right now? Okay. So the interesting thing about this disease is, unlike an earthquake or an act of God, right, that just happens out of nowhere, or a terrorist attack that we missed, this thing was like a slow knuckle curveball. We knew it. We saw it. We're like, that pitch is coming right at me, you know, and it's not a fastball at 98 miles an hour. That thing's coming at me at 72 miles an hour. But I think we missed it. I think we underestimated what it would do to our healthcare system. Again, exposing vulnerabilities to healthcare system. Secondly, another vulnerability it exposed is our economy. Our economy is not as strong as people say it is, just being frank. And I'm super patriotic guy.
Me too.
We have a lot of service industry-oriented workforces in this economy. Okay, so what I mean by that is, just look at me. I'm in New York, right? I spend a lot of money on discretionary spending. I go to a spin class and I spend $35, and I'm in a room with about 60 people, and we're all right next to each other, and it's hot and it's sweaty, whatever. Okay, that class cost me $35. I ordered a Peloton bike. I'm waiting for the Peloton bike to come. I am not comfortable going back to that environment because of social distancing and because of Corona or any other disease, where I'm in a room with a bunch of people sweating and breathing on top of each other. Think about that. I don't go back to Flywheel. It's a place I went to, or there's like a SoulCycle. The people who taught the class, they're out of work. The company is not operational, right? So think about how many people are in that ecosystem just of me going to a class that now, what do they do for work, right? There's so many niche industries that were based on discretionary income. People get their hair colored, their hair cut. They go out to eat. They go to a show. All this stuff's great, and I'm 100% supportive of it. But my point is, it's discretionary. I'm still alive. We're still alive without doing it. And there are substitutes. I can get a bike and ride at home. I don't need to go to a class. So our economy, look at these malls, right? I was telling somebody, you know, look at Minnesota, that the malls of the world
Mall
in Minnesota.
America.
Mall
of
America, right? But think about that. You go to the mall, you go to Macy's, or you go to Neiman Marcus, and you buy stuff that's made in China, which you could just buy online, number one. Then you go to the Cheesecake Factory. You know, a lot of that stuff.
Not anymore.
It doesn't really matter whether you do. That's what I'm saying. So, like, real estate, if you think about real estate, going to an office, having swanky offices and cubicles and stuff, not going to happen anymore. People are working from home. Our productivity, with all these bad economic numbers you showed unemployment, our productivity has not gone down that people are working from home. The big fear for people from working from home, and I'm an old guy, is like an I Love Lucy when you had a manager who was, it's called management by sight. You had your manager who was either in the middle of the floor or the corner of the floor at a glass office. And he would look out and say, hey, Crypto Blood, you're chit-chatting to your friend. You're not typing fast enough.
Right.
Speed
right,
it
right.
up. You know, it's supposed to be 55 words per minute. Right. Hurry up. Right.
Right.
Our productivity right. has not gone down. I haven't heard that in two months that people that work from home. It's probably
honestly,
gone up.
My buddy, he lives in Charlotte. He works for one of the big banks. He said he's working more than he was going into the office. You know? And so it's prolonged. It's stretched out during the day more, but he's working.
But he's
more.
Getting it done. It doesn't matter. Like 9 to 5 right. doesn't matter.
You get, right.
I worked from a home office for years and I've always worked in corporate and I get more done, but I never stop working. I work on yeah. weekends. I'm working today.
That's the problem. I mean, yeah, that is
it's
the
problem, but the point is why do you need to pay for an office to force your employees to go to an office to pay for transportation costs, to spend money on a cup of coffee, to buy lunch? It's so much cheaper for the employee to work from home and healthier and better for our environment because we're not polluting by commuting, and cheaper for the company to not have to pay for real estate. So everybody wins in this situation. Who doesn't win? Real estate people, land developers, Cheesecake Factory, malls. And I have nothing against them, but I'm saying, why is that the right way? Just because we did it.
I think I hear what you're hinting at. And this is what two things I got from your statement. One being, you talked about discretionary, right? And how this whole economy over here in America is all discretionary. So that to me equals, I equate discretionary with the service industry, mm-hmm. the service sector. We don't make anything anymore, right? So
correct.
If we made things, those things are needed, are necessary, either here in America or around the world. We made widgets for every damn thing that's produced in the world. We would still have an underpinning of an economy. It was all built on a house of cards, I think. And so this virus really exposes that.
100%.
Right? And then secondly, you talked about demand destruction. I think there's going to be a structural shift in how we work. Right? I don't think we're going back to the lavish 20,000 square foot, buildings downtown. I don't know. Kind of give us your assessment of what is it going to look like post COVID-19?
I think you're right. I think we're going to get into an environment where there's going to be an office, but people are going to go in on an alternating basis or something. I mean, maybe you go in once a week and you have a team huddle and a team meeting, mm-hmm. assuming you're social distancing and whatever, you're wearing masks. I mean, I'm talking like post-vaccination, okay? So mm-hmm. maybe 2 years. But why do you need an office? You really don't. Now, at the mm-hmm. end of the day, let's kind of analyze that a little more. Let's peel back a little an onion. Those costs, the overhead, right, are passed on to the consumer. So the more we can
that's right
narrow yes. down and focus our overhead costs, mm-hmm. not only rent, utilities, and all that you got to pay, right? And insurance and all that are ultimately passed on to the consumer. So to the extent you don't need that or need as much of that, I think the consumer wins. Second point is absolutely right about the service industry. We have an economy based on a service industry, and that's troubling because what I've identified years ago, and I got my MBA at MIT Sloan, is there are a lot of professors up there who've done a lot of good work in this. We need to fill the skills gap. We've got a big skills gap in this country, okay? What I mean by that is we have a lot of jobs in the world in this country, but they involve technology. They involve some kind of technological sophistication. Mm-hmm. We don't have enough people in this country who can code. Let's just be honest. We don't, okay? So again, you're right. The economy felt like a house of cards because I went to get my hair cut. I went to get my dry cleaning. I went to the Cheesecake Factory in the mall. How many people, and then I tip people and all that. How many people are affected in that food chain by one guy like me? Multiply that by millions of people. Those are the jobs that people had. And I'm not criticizing those jobs. I'm just saying this is fact. This is what it
right.
is.
Right.
Going forward, those individuals need to reinvent themselves. And I'm not putting the onus on those individuals. I'm putting the onus on the government mm-hmm. to work cooperatively with Google. I know Google's hate. I'm just using them as an example. Google, Cornell University, Columbia University, Harvard, whatever. Create a cooperative where you teach entrepreneurship. You
for
make
free.
An ecosystem. Exactly.
For
you,
free.
You make
that's the problem.
You make create a whole ecosystem around Ithaca, New York, which is a depressed economy. New York State, outside New York City, is totally depressed. You drive from New York City upstate, completely depressed. Outside of Albany, which is the capital, it's really bad. You have people working in malls. You have people working in supermarkets that are 50 years old, working in Starbucks. And again, I'm not being critical. I'm just saying objectively, we need to teach people skills. Those skills could be transferable where you can work from home. Think about the jobs that where people are working from home. There is a bunch of our economy that's working right now. They're working remotely because they have skills and they have jobs that they can work remotely. A lot of service industry jobs will continue, which I think are great, but a lot won't. And what do we do for those people? We can't let them collect unemployment forever, which is, it's just unfair to them and to the country. We need to help them. So we need the government to step up and provide training and skills with major corporations, create ecosystems around a university, let's say. So say Ithaca, as an example, Cornell's in Ithaca. Create some kind of venture for entrepreneurship in Ithaca, New York, where if you start a business, you hire people from Ithaca or around Ithaca, you work with Cornell, maybe get Cornell graduates, get the school to give money, get the state, New York State to give money, and get Google or IBM or Microsoft or whomever, Facebook to give money, and you train people. Now you become essentially this little city within Ithaca that is super duper prepared to handle really cool issues that come up with technology. Maybe preventing a new pandemic, right? Maybe research and development, maybe helping with testing, maybe helping with social distancing and contact tracing, maybe helping with companies reopen, just to give you examples of what something like that could do. Maybe blockchain, maybe crypto, right? I mean, maybe we could do mining of crypto. I mean, there's so much we could do, but we can't just sit around and feel bad for each other. Right. I think right now there's this kind of malaise that's taking over the country. Part of the fear is now turning into a depression where people feel, and I'm not talking about economic, it will lead to an economic depression. I'm talking about a psychological depression where people are feeling bad. Hey, I worked at a company. I'm not sure that company is going to reopen. What am I going to do? Well, figure it out. Let's figure out what you can do. We need to help these people and encourage them and train them and teach them and motivate them and tell them that they're valuable members of society and the economy, but teach them some skills. So if someone's 40 or 50, you might not teach them how to be an engineer, but maybe you could teach them how to work in that environment that involves coding or technology. Or, I mean, I'm on my phone constantly. Right. I use my phone for everything from banking to communicating with clients to talking to people, texting, whatever. How many apps do we have on a phone? So many. We could always use different apps, better apps. So just right there is a small example of needs for technology. Again, in New York State, we're utilizing new technologies. Governor Cuomo had Eric Schmidt, who was the former CEO of Google, on his press conference the other day.
Yeah, I saw that.
They're going to do some cool stuff with regard to contact tracing, testing. I mean, people are going to need to be tested. Whether or not people think it's a hoax, which drives me crazy, that's a topic for the discussion. It's clearly not a hoax. The numbers are what they are, whatever. But we need to determine.
They're underreported to me, to be honest with you.
Potentially, but we need to determine who's infected from who's not. So when we talk about why things were somewhat disruptive with how we closed things down is we didn't have a plan. The plan should have been what I call a targeted approach. If we had tests available, and unfortunately, again, objectively, they're not readily available.
Still,
and I chronicled on social media, but they're not.
Yeah.
They're not. So, and I got tested. I'm waiting for my results. We talked about it earlier. And I had to pay like $130 at Quest Labs yesterday.
See, that's the part I don't. I saw Quest Labs reply to your tweet like, please DM us. And
they want it to be a private conversation now. Like, no. We should have everybody tested. Maybe somebody who's out of work doesn't have $130 to get tested. How ridiculous is that? Talking about like focusing on, you know, the people who are hurting right now economically. I mean, wow. Imagine if you got a family of 3 or 4 people and you're gonna spend $130 per person to get tested. That's ridiculous and grossly inappropriate. But that's what I'm talking about in terms of preparation. We have no game. We need to make sure that everybody gets tested. Everybody should have been tested. If everybody was tested, let's say in February, we probably would not have had to shut things down the way we did. We shut things down in abundance of caution, like you said, because we want to prevent the spread of the disease, because we didn't know who had it from who didn't. So we assumed everybody could get it. That's why we shut things down the way we did.
Yeah, you know, and that's, I guess, one critical, one thing I have to critique Mr. Trump on is that he just didn't, he and his team just, you can see it. It's so obvious. They have no plan. To me, they still have no plan. It's crazy, but I don't know how many days are we into this thing, 90 days or 70 something days. I still don't see a plan from the White House on what we're going to do next. I mean, it's just kind of all over the place. One day it's this. One day he says, you know, we need to lock it down. Then a week later, he's saying liberate Michigan, liberate, you know, Georgia right. and all. So we don't have a consistent plan. And so I just don't know where we go from here.
No, that's a great point. I agree. I think because we didn't have a plan to shut down, we clearly don't have a plan to reopen, right? The flip side of shutting down is reopening, right? Mm-hmm. And if we didn't have a plan to shut down, we're wasting time figuring out how to reopen. The first piece to me of reopening is testing, because there's already lawsuits. I read in the New York Post yesterday. The New York Post is actually a good source for litigation, believe it or not. They always publish lawsuits. Some individual unfortunately passed away in Pennsylvania. He worked at a meatpacking plant and he got corona, he died. So now his family is suing the meatpacking plant for wrongful death and negligence. Okay, so you're gonna see a bunch of lawsuits because a lot of lawyers are unemployed right now. A lot of lawyers, either the law firms contracted because people can't pay bills, a lot of courts are still closed. So a lot of lawyers are looking to drum up business and a lot of people have died. So now think about it. You have these lawsuits where potentially the families of people who died are going to claim that their father, mother, brother, sister, whomever in their family died because they were in a harmful work environment. And what did that company to do? What did that company do to prevent the spread of corona? So it's an interesting question, but nonetheless, how do we prevent that? I mean, right now, Trump signed the Defense Production Act for meatpacking plants, right? So last week he did that because the meatpacking plants were shutting down because many people who worked there had corona and they were worried about litigation, not only from employees, but from maybe restaurants or whomever buys their meat. So Trump gave them immunity in a Defense Production Act. Small companies that have, you know, 10, 20 employees, what immunity do they have from litigation? None.
Yeah.
So you're really going to put the onus on me and say, if I have a small business to open up and I want to open up now. And then what happens if one person who works for me and my company has corona? And let's say I have a restaurant. What kind of paranoia is that going to set off in terms of, we're talking about this earlier, in terms of fear? So there's a fear to close down. There's a fear to reopen, but there's also a fear to reopen too soon, because if we reopen too soon and we have to shut down, it's going to be swift and we're never going to reopen.
The only way
this is going to work is if people, to the extent they can, are tested. And I'm not talking about taking someone's temperature. I'm talking about someone gets tested, either the swab test, the nasal swab test, or the saliva test, or the antibody test, whatever. Everyone should get tested, and it should be some recordation of the test. That information should be given to the employer, and the employer should make a determination of who works for me, who has corona. If they do, it's unfortunate. They should stay home, work from home to the extent they can, or if you're negative, you come back to the office, and then within the office, they have supplies, masks, gloves, they do disinfecting, whatever. But up until that happens, things are not going to go back to normal. I'll give you a little example. So there's some place that I like to go to in Chinatown and get dumplings. So I go to get dumplings there on the weekends. It's a wonderful place. And I live in downtown Manhattan in a financial district, and I walk there. I am afraid to go back there. Not because I think it's a bad place. I think it's a great place. But psychologically, I'm worried that I don't know where those dumplings were made. They steam the dumplings. I don't really see how they make them. So I'm fearful of ordering. Obviously, they're closed in terms of I can't sit there, but I could order to take out. I'm fearful of doing that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not really a fearful guy. You know, I don't really have this kind of like walk around the streets like, you know, brick's going to fall and hit me in the head. I'm not that kind of guy, but I'm worried about, I don't feel comfortable eating at this place. And you know, if they have Corona, does Corona die because they steam the dumplings or the heat? I just don't know. So what would make me feel comfortable? Crypto Blood. I know this sounds crazy. I go in that place. They give me a mask. They give me gloves. They give me a hand sanitizer. The people in there have literally like hazmat suits on. I know this sounds crazy, but I would feel comfortable that they thought this through. Paper menus, stuff like that. Yeah. But just to reopen and say, okay, you know, we waited 2 months now and the curve has flattened. We're good. No, we're good because we prevented people from giving it to each other by limiting the contact. It's basic
stuff. That's funny because that's exactly, I said this on a stream the other day. I was showing the statistics here in Michigan. And I showed them, I wish I could bring that up. I showed them how the curve was really coming down. I said, this didn't happen because of some magical osmosis movement of the virus just disappearing.
Right.
We shut down. The reason the curve came down is because we shut down. So if we open back up, guess what? The curve is going to go right back up.
100%. If we go back to living the way, so we
the
have
way we did, yeah.
Pre-corona, post-corona. If we go back to living the way we did pre-corona, post-corona, what's going to happen? People are going to get infected. The difference between post-corona and pre-corona, pre-corona was like, what is this thing? It's from China. It's not, it's like the flu. It's not going to really harm us and hurt us. Now, with all this knowledge we have and confusion, ambiguity, and fear, if people get reinfected and that curve starts to come up, that will lead to a depression, unfortunately. I am 100% convinced. A depression for many years.
Yeah, I'm concerned about that. I really am, because this thing is not, you know, and it's just interesting seeing how we're the United States, right? And each state has their own governance and how they want to plan and do things. We see Georgia's opened up. We see Florida's opened up. And, you know, the ones that are still closed will be penalized because of those states, because we don't have a closed border. So people from Georgia can go to Michigan, they can go to New York. People from Florida can go to New York. People from New York go to Florida. So I just don't know, you know, for the people out there who are complaining about their constitutional rights and they're complaining about this lockdown, to be honest with you, Manny, this lockdown was a, I don't even want to say that word, but was a weak lockdown. It wasn't even a real lockdown anywhere in this country. A lockdown looks like China.
Right.
What they did in Wuhan, you could not leave your house. Mm-hmm. You couldn't. You couldn't leave your complex. That's a lockdown.
Right.
I don't know. We couldn't do that here, but I'm just saying, like, we complain here in America about our constitutional rights. This is, as you stated at the beginning, this is an effort. This should be an effort by everyone. We should be all uniting together to flatten the curve so that we could get back to something that resembled our normal past.
Totally agree.
I think we're gonna have a new normal, to be honest with you. I don't think we're going back.
We're not. And you know, if you look at probably a good comparison is polio, right? My mother's 82 and my aunt is 87, and I grew up in Brooklyn, and my family's from Italy originally, my grandparents, right? And my mother, my aunt, and a cousin of the family went to a pool in Brooklyn when my mother was young. So my mother's 82 now, so she probably was like 5 or 6. She got sick. My aunt got sick. My cousin got sick, and my mother got sick. They all had temperatures because they thought they had polio, and they had high fevers for a while, and then the fevers broke, and by the grace of God, my aunt and my mother were okay. But the cousin, my cousin wasn't, and she was paralyzed. And she was in a wheelchair from that point in time, and she died a couple of years ago because she was stricken with polio, unfortunately. So this stuff's not a joke. And this has happened before in this country, and it took a while for Jonas Salk to come up with the vaccination. It took a while. It took long.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, we could rush it, because this is science, okay? And as much as I want a vaccination tomorrow at the end of the year, you have to do clinical trials. I don't want to be the person that takes a vaccine and dies from it or gets side effects from it. You have to let science do its thing.
That's why
science is science. Science is not politics. Okay?
Yeah, that's why I'm not too rushed to get this vaccine if it comes out too soon, Manny. I'm just be honest with you. I mean, my family has been affected by COVID. My wife tested positive, so
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, this was 5 weeks ago. She's back. You know, and that's another thing. It takes. They're not saying this, but if you catch it and you go through the whole symptoms and everything, this thing lasts for 5 weeks, 6 weeks altogether.
Yeah, it's not over in 2 weeks. Like, oh, quarantine yourself for 14 days and then you're...
No. So my symptoms went on for about 3 weeks. My wife, 5 weeks. My wife's aunt, 6 weeks. So, but anyway, I'm not willing to take a vaccine if it's going to be ready in 12 months. I'm not. I think it's just too fast.
I agree. And I think that we need to take this as seriously as we can. You're absolutely right in terms of the lockdown. It wasn't a real lockdown. And at the end of the day, there have been cases, right? Some in the media, some not, where people in certain states, and Pennsylvania is an example, challenged the lockdown. They went to the Supreme Court.
State.
Yeah, and the courts pretty much ruled in favor of the governments, the governors, because they're saying that, which I think is a weak argument. Oh, the governor enacted a law by fiat of executive order, and it wasn't promulgated by the legislature or whatever. Look, these are crazy times right now. Governors have emergency powers. Imagine trying to get a vote on stuff. You might not be able to do it quick enough if you need to act swiftly. And if you look at what's kind of going on, I mean, I'm struggling with, and I know that it's gone viral in terms of social media, these lockdowns in like Texas. So the Supreme Courts in these states usually have found in favor of the governors, okay? Except for like some type of religious expression in Kansas, which to me makes sense. I don't know why in New York liquor stores are open, but houses of worship are not. And we just went through Easter, Passover, and Ramadan, and we're not allowed, when we feel this isolationism of being quarantined, not allowed to celebrate our religions. Nonetheless, if you look at what happened in Texas, I'm struggling with why that hairdresser acts so defiantly. I didn't like that the judge asked her to apologize to the legislators in that state of Texas.
How do you feel about her being arrested, though? How do you feel about that part?
I'm struggling with the fact that she was arrested. I would have been okay if she was given a summons. So let me be clear. I think they needed to go too. As far as they did, but I don't think she's a hero.
No,
because she defied the law and put people's lives
in
risk.
Absolutely.
For who? For who?
For her own,
her
profit.
Own benefit. Why couldn't she have, just kind of spitballing it here, contacted her clients and gone to her clients' homes and cut their hair, or, mm-hmm. or they went to her home?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what is the point of opening up a business in defiance of an order, by an executive order, by Greg Abbott, who's a great governor, that other people are complying with? That's a free rider issue. Everybody else has to abide by the order, but not me, because I need to feed my kids. What about you and your kids? I mean, you feeding your kids isn't as important as me feeding my kids. So her rationale was off. Do I think she should have been arrested and treated that way? No, I think she should have been summoned. And I think they should have prohibited her from reopening her place.
Yeah.
Because it's not fair. In a level of fairness, we all need to comply with the law and go through this.
Mm-hmm.
We all need to comply and deal with it in the same way. So I think on both sides of the fence, I think the police, unfortunately, and the law enforcement overreacted. But I think at the same time, she did as well. And she was a bit of a grandstander. And I don't think that's cool. Right?
Yeah.
I think we all need to deal with this stuff. Now, maybe the effective way would have been she hired counsel, or she petitioned Governor Abbott or the lieutenant governor and said, hey, I want to reopen my business. We in Texas, we have a lot of people here, but we're not as dense as New York or Michigan or New Jersey, right? So we don't have the same situation going on in terms of infection rate and people dying that they do in those states. So therefore, can you reopen hair salons if we employ certain measures like social distancing, masks, disinfectant gloves? That I would have been all supportive of, entirely supportive of. But this act of defiance where people are going to the state capitals and they're waving flags and they have guns and rifles. I mean, they did that in Michigan. Yep. It makes me a bit embarrassed, right? I feel like we're not being represented and portrayed by the best people that should represent and portray us. I don't like that. I think
because other countries are taking it seriously, man. I don't see the. I mean, I'm sure there are people in various countries around the globe that are pissed off about, but for the most part, I'm seeing people comply. For the most part, comply with what's going on and take it seriously. At least, maybe they don't comply, but they're taking it seriously. I don't see as much tinfoil hat.
Right, and at the end of the absolutely, and at the end of the day, like I said earlier, if we're all equal, then no one is more important than anybody else. So, your rationale in opening your business is selfish.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's call it like it is. Agreed. You're being selfish if you think you're more important than me. And you taking care of your family is more important than me taking care of my family. I've got to figure out how to take care of my family if I can't open up my hair salon, but you have to open up your hair salon. That's not good. I'm sorry. We can't celebrate that. Okay. We can't give someone a pat on the back for that and say, yes, you're a hero. I don't go for that. I think that's wrong. And I think that's not patriotic. I think that's unpatriotic. Okay. That's acting selfishly.
Let me ask you this before we move on to blockchain, because you are a blockchain consultant, attorney. I want to pick your brain about what's going on with the halving coming up. But before we do that, have you been directly impacted by this coronavirus or indirectly since you're kind of on the ground?
I have. I mean, thanks for the question. New York is pretty much shut down. A lot of my clients are not operational. So I have. I'm trying to pivot my business in certain areas. A lot of the blockchain stuff I was working on, it's kind of been pushed to the side because people can't work. It's tough to get funding. A lot of my clients are having a difficulty paying me. So absolutely, I've been impacted. But, you know, how I run my life and how I run my business is with prudence. And, you know, I never try to go, you know, beyond my skis, right, in terms of maintaining a rainy day fund.
And that's another thing I think as Americans, you know, we in general live by the moment, right? It's check to check for most of America.
It's pretty dangerous. I mean, we used to be a saver nation. Now we're clearly a debtor nation. And I didn't realize how many people were living on the edge. Like, things are closed for a month, which sucks, or 2 months, which sucks even more. But that really bankrupts you. Like, you're living you don't have a 6 month window. I mean, we need to teach people how to do that. Yes.
Yeah, businesses as well. I'm very surprised. But that brings me to this point. I think now, post-COVID, we're going to have a shift in society's view on how money, you know, how to utilize money and save money. That may be a shift. And if that happens, that's going to be a shift in how we generate our GDP. Most of
you're
it
right, because it's going to be less
services.
Spending and more savings. You're absolutely right. And less credit card debt. You're absolutely right. And that's a great point. And again, if people live recklessly, irresponsibly, and I'm not saying they do, well, they did. But the point is, I think a lot of what we're talking about is people lived on the edge and maybe they weren't as prudent or practical as they should have been because they assumed that I was always going to go to Cheesecake Factory and I was always going to go to the Gap or I was always going to get my hair cut or whatever. And then that whole food chain, that whole ecosystem was never going to end. And, you know, look, styles change. I mean, you'll go back to the 70s and the way people dress. People used to smoke, right? I use this example of let's say you and I create a really cool ashtray company. You know, like in the 1970s, we had this like swanky ashtrays where people would smoke and stuff like that. What would happen now with all the non-smoking? We'd be out of business because nobody's buying ashtrays. Should I go to government to get a bailout because our ashtray company went out of business? You're an entrepreneur. You're putting yourself at risk. You're putting your career and your business at risk. I can't only pat you on the back and reward you for your success. But when you lose, I backstop you. I mean, that's like me, you know, going to Vegas. And if I win, I'm like, woohoo, yeah. And I don't share any of the winnings with you. But if I lose, I go, bail me out. I mean, at what level does this fall on the individual and not on the government?
You bring up a good point.
It's the United States.
I don't like the way we're going with this, man. All these bailouts. I thought we were free capitalism.
Right. I mean, look at these people.
Markets.
It's a double standard. These people going to the Capitol. You are infringing on my rights to make money. Okay, you're right. Okay, so we're going to reopen, but you want a bailout also, right? Oh, wait a minute now. So wait. You have the rights to work, right? Go work. But now the government that you hate because they won't reopen, you also want that government to cut you a check? Mm-hmm. Wait, I'm a little confused. Sorry, man. Maybe I'm just too dumb. I ain't getting it. You hate the government because they won't reopen. But that same government you hate, you want them to backstop your losses that you didn't have the foresight maybe to have a rainy day fund or have a second business or a side business or whatever. Again, not being critical. This is all objective. And I think hindsight is 2020. And when this thing's over or close to being over, we need to look back and we need to get our act together. And
Wall
our
Street
act
too,
together
man.
Means
the,
us.
The stock buybacks situation, which quite honestly used to be illegal, they're complaining and wanting bailouts too. You take the airline.
100%. 100%.
It's just
I don't agree with it. I mean, we have in this country something great in our code, the federal code. It's called the bankruptcy code, the bankruptcy acts, right? Mm-hmm. The bankruptcies prevent you from going out of business because you restructure your debt. So when people say, "Oh, I'm going to go out of business," that's not true. We have a backstop. It's called you file for bankruptcy. Okay? And if you're an airline and you're living large and then you're charging me now $25 for me to put my bag on a plane and you don't give me any more food and the seats are so tight on the side of me, in front of me, behind me, you're packing the people in, you're living large. Mm-hmm. Now something like this happens. You want a bailout? Were you helping me out when you were making money? No. I have no benefit on the upside. Notice how all this is the same. We don't benefit in people's success, either companies or individuals. They benefit. Mm-hmm. We then have to bail these people out when they're hurting. Isn't that inconsistent? Mm-hmm. Why don't they give me some of the upside?
Right.
If I give you money, pay me back, and then when you become successful again, give me some of those profits. No.
Right.
No way. I'm not sharing that with you. Yeah. Oh, but you want me to bail you out? That's un-American. Figure it out. We will use whatever laws are in place. Let's say bankruptcy laws. File for bankruptcy. Do I want to see people go bankrupt? No. But then again, why is Guess or The Gap? Again, this is not the 1980s. People don't dress like that anymore. You know, I go by this like Guess store by the South Tree Seaport of New York, and it reminds me of 1985. Mm-hmm. And it's like J-Lo does like some cool ads for them and stuff and modeling for them. But the clothes remind me of when I was like a teenager.
Right.
Nobody dresses like that anymore.
Right.
Get with the times. Maybe nobody goes there because nobody wants to dress like that anymore. And you don't have the influence because kids don't use dress like that. And you don't have that kind of impact. But I got to bail you out. J. Crew. I mean, these companies, Neiman Marcus, right? These companies that want to bail outs are these retail outlets that are really their business model. It's 1985.
They should have pivoted back in the .com era.
What's the most successful company in the world? Amazon,
yeah.
Why? Because they got rid of brick and mortar and they deliver stuff to you and it's online. So why are we bailing out companies that didn't keep up with the times? Those are business decisions, my friend. Yeah. I get COVID exacerbated it, okay?
Sure.
So maybe this
It
accelerated. Yeah. Maybe this would have happened in 2 years or 3 years, but it was going to happen. This wasn't just something Corona that happened and these weird things happened because of Corona. No. These vulnerabilities existed.
That's right.
This Corona just shed a big magnifying glass on it. Now we're saying, oh, do we need that big mall? Do we need the Cheesecake Factory? Do we need the Gap? Do we need J. Crew? We never would have asked those questions if coronavirus didn't happen and forced us to look at it. Now we're being forced to look at our receipts. We're looking at fees and credit card debt and student loans. And do we need to even go to college in the way we do?
Yeah.
Do we need to sit in a classroom with 200-300 people in a lecture hall? I mean, is that an effective way of learning? I mean, and paying all this money for it? $60,000-$70,000 to go to a university? I mean, come on now. Maybe that's 1980s or 1970s as well. Maybe we should have online learning. Maybe it should be the choice of the students.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that those are the silver linings in this whole thing, Manny. I think on the other side of this post-COVID, it's going to be a more lean economy, a more efficient economy. I think a wealthier economy, because we're going to bring a lot of stuff back home.
It's going to be tighter, man. It's going to be stronger because these exposure holes right now, the economy is Swiss cheese.
Yep.
All right. We need to fill in those holes. Okay. And we're filling them in, and we have no choice but to fill them in. So sometimes when your back's against the wall, you got to make it happen. And we were all looking for excuses to not make it happen. Oh yeah, you know, we'll take care of that next year. We got one more year of this or one more season. No, we don't. You have no time. You either do it or you don't. You either left behind, the train's leaving the station. You either left behind or you're on the train. This train of technology, innovation, entrepreneurship, the train's coming down the tracks. You get on that train or you're left behind. There's no, it's binary. And the choice is up to you, and you could step up and participate in the economy. Getting into blockchain, I think blockchain is tremendous. I think Paul Tudor Jones, absolutely. Bitcoin's the way.
It's a big move, man.
The difficulty in people getting their stimulus check, people didn't have direct deposit, whatever. If people had wallets, we could get them money instantaneously.
That's true.
And also think about this too. Think about money, paper money. Paper money is dirty.
Yep.
If I sneeze, if I put it in my pocket, whatever, right? Look, we could put money on a phone, some kind of virtual currency. There's a Bitcoin, whatever. You could use the phone and swipe it, buy stuff. You don't even need a cashier at that point. I could order with my app and pay. Boom, done. I could just pick it up, go to Starbucks, number 37. I get my macchiato or whatever, and I'm done.
Mm-hmm. Tudor Jones said that we're witnessing the great monetary inflation and unprecedented expansion of every form of money, unlike anything the developed world has ever seen. So he said $3.2 trillion has been printed, or the equivalent of 6.6% of global economic output since February. So, you know, this is a big move by a macro guy like Paul Tudor Jones to make this move. Like, is this a watershed moment? Do you see more guys doing the Bitcoin play?
Absolutely. I think it's been going on for quite some time. He's one of the first to go public with it, and I want to thank him for that.
Nice.
I appreciate that. With the halving coming up, I mean, I think Bitcoin is going to go to the moon. And again, this is not financial advice, but right. You know, we're hovering around 10,000. That's a resistance point, okay?
Yeah.
So once we blow through that, we're off to the races. I think, you know, I've been talking to a couple of people about whether Bitcoin is correlated to the stock market or not. Right?
It has
a
lot of been people, in the short
it
run.
It has been. And,
in the
and,
short
and,
run.
Exactly. And I think the reason why, from the people I'm talking to, is because a lot of major institutions and major players own it. So I think they're looking at it as another asset class.
Yep.
The market's up, Bitcoin's up. The market's down, Bitcoin's down. Because
yep,
they're just going
to
say, I have
sell
equities,
margins and
I
stuff.
Have bonds, I have debt. I have options, right?
When does that correlation break? Because when it breaks, I think this time, when it breaks, it's going to really accelerate Bitcoin.
I think it breaks based upon a certain pricing point, okay? So if Bitcoin goes way up, I'm talking back over 15,000,
yeah,
right? It's gonna, and what having happening next week, I think that it's gonna break away.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's going to break away and not be as correlated as it is to the market and just be off to the races. Okay,
yep, me too.
I think it wasn't correlated. I think there was some mass adoption in terms of the ownership, right? You have fund managers having mm-hmm. it as a type of alternative investment. So they have, you know, 3 to 5% of the pie chart of what they invest in into alternative investments, and Bitcoin is an alternative investment. So mm-hmm. I think you've seen that correlation. I think as we move away post halving and the price of Bitcoin becomes more expensive, you will see a separation of that correlation. I don't know how deep, but I think it's starting already, because Bitcoin's been going up, the market's been going up, going down. The weird thing about the stock market is the market is always, the glass is half full, okay?
Yes.
So, okay, the market went up 500 points yesterday, right? We had horrific, horrific numbers with regard to unemployment. But you know what they said? Oh, 400 points. You know what they said?
We
expect it to be worse.
Right. 22 million. Yeah.
So I lost the game, but I thought I was going to lose. I thought I was going to really lose. But I lost, you know, the Yankees lost to the Tigers 4-3. But I thought the Yankees were going to lose, you know, 10-0.
Right.
Like, No, they lost.
A win is a win, unemployment, a lose is a lose. Right.
Unemployment is bad.
Yeah.
14% unemployment sucks. 20% unemployment is lethal. 25% unemployment is depression. Now, could it be worse? Could it be 30% unemployment? Of course. But that means the market goes up, because it could always be worse. But you know what? Not it could, it should be better. It should, not could. It could be worse, but it should be better. That is where there will be a divergence between Bitcoin and the stock market, which, you know, is also, let's be clear. The Fed is priming the pump, right? I mean, the Fed is like, here you go, guys, just here you go. And that's why the professional traders who are trading on Wall Street, hedge fund managers even, aren't as significant as they used to be. The market, if you look at where the market is crazily, it's not too far from the all-time high. So it's like almost 25,000, and the high was 30,000. So,
but the price valuation is well over where we were at the highs.
Of course,
I think it's like 20 something times earnings now.
Right, and which is crazy. And the thing is too, is money is cheap. So by the Fed, right? I mean, think about this. If I lend you money at 0% interest, why are you spending your own money?
Right.
Right. So even the most successful companies are going to take money from the Fed, right? Why not? It's free.
Right.
So whatever you make, you're going to make, plus the fact that your cost of financing is zero. So we're not inducing
total distortion of markets,
these companies, man, our economy to grow. What we're trying to do is create a V, right? We're trying to say we were here and then we went here and now we're here, right? Just go down like a V. We're artificially, through the priming of the pump by the Fed, right, and all these bailouts, is trying to create a V. Okay, first of all, it's not going to be a V. It's going to be a U or maybe a W, number one. Number two, it's artificial. The market is great. I love the stock market. I've been working around the stock market since I'm 21 years old. I love the stock market. It's the best thing in the world. It's transparent. It's efficient. I love it. It's changed my life, gave me a career. I met great people, philanthropic people, wonderful people. Okay. But at the end of the day, the market does what it does. You cannot interfere with the market forces. I'm a hands-off guy. Let the market do what it does. You need guide rails, circuit breakers, and whatever. Yes. But at the end of the day, let the market do what it does. You know what that means? That means there's going to be deleterious effects in this market the end of this year, next year, and the year after, if we keep artificially trying to pump up the market. The market won't forget. And these bad things that we're talking about, unemployment or whatever, they're going to reflect themselves in the market, in earnings, in unemployment.
Yeah, you can't print that. You can't print earnings.
It's all short term. This is short term. And I think Bitcoin is, there's going to be a big flight to Bitcoin, okay? Because of the anti-inflationary way that Bitcoin was created by Satoshi, and the thinking behind that, and the fact that when we print all this money, trillions of dollars of bailout, trillions, what kind of inflationary impact is that going to have on us? So what's going to be the pricing power of a dollar? Nothing in like a couple of years, or maybe even at the end of this year. I mean, that's a joke. So the Fed is again, let the market do what it does. If the market needs to crater, let it crater. Let it reach a bottom point, and then you could maybe see the V. What we're trying to do is prevent it from hitting a bottom point. Every time it goes down, inject money, inject lending, buy bonds, okay? So we're never letting it fall. It eventually is going to push through that. The market is more powerful than any forces that try to affect it. I'll say that again. The market is the most powerful thing. You cannot affect the market long term. The market will get you back. Okay. The market is awesome. And the market is resilient. And the market will do what it does. You can't artificially try to impact the market long term. Short term, yeah. Yeah, short term, maybe we could bounce back and we're at 28,000. That's bogus and fake and artificial. Well, unemployment is going to be 20%. I care about a V-shaped recovery. I'm walking around New York City, things are still boarded up. People aren't working. People aren't working and they're getting unemployment. Crypto blood, that unemployment is going to run out. How are we going to re-employ those people if those places they worked at, like we talked about earlier, they don't open up? What do we do? Right. We're screwed. We are screwed if we don't have a plan. This is all planning. It's planning and execution. two things, right? You can't execute unless you have a plan. Like this interview, I had some scheduling problems. I apologize, but planning. But it's all. But I'm saying, but it's planning, right? We planned it and we're doing it, right? We want to reopen. We need a plan. Why was it so ugly how we closed? We didn't have a plan. We just said close.
Yeah.
Boom. That's the problem. So plan it right. Get the right people involved. Execute that plan. Then we'll be okay. Without that, we're just spitballing it.
No, I agree, man. And wow, crazy times we're in. But I think people, again, there's a silver lining in everything. You have to just do your due diligence and look for it. And I think there are many areas. We talked about it today, guys. Bitcoin. I told someone the other night, start a business making something here in the United States. That's going to come back. Manufacturing is going to come back. Figure out something you can do to make something. I started a mask business, and we have the N95 filters. I'm making more masks, Manny, than I'm making a lot of money doing these masks.
Good for you.
And, you know, just people need to start making something again.
Or help people out. I mean, when you help people out, you get good inertia. You get good karma. Help people out. Maybe then someone will return the favor.
Right.
Stop sitting around licking our wounds, moaning and complaining. I mean, it sucks for everybody. We're all going through the same thing. So it's not like you're in a worse position than me and I'm in a better position than you. We're all suffering. Maybe we help each other out and you get some good karma, and maybe someone will help you out and your fortunes will change. But if we just kind of sit back and moan about it, and like you said, don't try to reinvent yourself, come up with a plan or whatever, it's going to be painful. And the longer we stay closed, the more difficult it's going to be to reopen.
So, Manny, how can people contact you? I have your website up, MannyAlejandro.com. Guys, if you need to contact him for anything blockchain related.
Reach out. I'm happy to help people with some pro bono work as well. If people need a hand, I'm happy to push them in the right direction if I can't help them. My Twitter is Manny_Alejandro. And that's my Twitter. Thank you. And also I'm on Facebook, and my email is MannyAlejandro@gmail.com. Happy to talk to people if they want to reach out to me. I'm happy to help people out if they want to hear my recommendation. You can see I'm not shy about expressing my opinions.
No, I would take his recommendation, people. He's a level-headed guy. That's why I had him on in the first place. Second time on, appreciate it. I'm going to have him on again, people. Make sure you hit that like button, though, and comment in the section below. Manny Alejandro, another kick in the session. We're out of here, people. He picked, by the way, Bill Withers, Lovely Day. I like this song. Rest in peace, Bill Withers. We out of here, people. Ha! And the world's all